Hey folks, it is Monday night, October 23rd, 2017, and you're listening to episode 66, the Mario Lemieux edition of AIH Superfans. I am one of your super duper fan pals, the most hated Jets fan on Twitter. My name is Alan, at Slip with five eyes, or Slip.
Hey, it's Roddy, and on the Twitter.com, I'm at Big Poppy Peg City, and I'm excited for three shows from now for episode 69.
Yes.
Nice.
I'm Brian. You can find me on Twitter.com, at Brian from AIH, and I just want to know why this isn't the Josh Hosang edition.
Nice. Are you gonna? Is someone gonna introduce Stinky too? I think Stinky just made an appearance on the podcast.
That was Brian's dog for sure. This is Chris. I'm Smack Live, and we got to redo this.
We have a guest on the show. Probably immediately regretting what's going on with all of us. Garrett Hole is joining us on Twitter. You can find him at Garrett Hole, GarrettHohl. And shamefully not Twitter verified as of yet, despite his almost 7,000 followers. But Garrett, tell us what you are doing in relation to the game of hockey, and then tell us why you are not verified yet and why Twitter sucks for not verifying you.
I'll start with the second question, actually. First, I believe... Oh, by the way, I sound the same as C-Mac. I know. I believe that now you actually have to apply to become verified. It's not done automatically for certain people if they do certain things. And I've just not gone through that effort because... I don't really have much of a need. I use Twitter mostly, and not so much for business. So maybe I'll eventually get verified, but it's not a big deal to me.
Okay. Well, I mean, if this show can help you, especially after that intro, then let us know.
Well, so you see, I was on this podcast.
And, okay, tell us about all the fun stuff that you do in relation to the game of hockey.
Well, everyone used to say that my ideas were terrible because of the fact that people working in the business knew more than me, so I decided to put myself in the business just so I could show everyone up. But in all honesty, what actually happened, long story short, I was originally writing on hockey, got my start on Arctic ice hockey. And from there, I made a bit of a name for myself, and player agency found me, and they liked what I did and a lot of stuff, so they got me to hop on and help them out. They're a young player agency, starting out of Vancouver. I think they were only around for like 2 or 3 years prior to me joining on to the team. And so what they wanted to do is they wanted to create like a competitive edge, and they were using statistics not just to evaluate players, but they're also using statistics to help develop their players. Player agency world is all about trying to get the top 1% players and trying to get them like super young. And what it does is it creates quite a barrier of entry for new teams or new agencies because you don't have that reputation. So what they decided to build a reputation was going for the 2 or 3%, but turning them into the 1% players, whether that's extending careers or being able to make them go further than they ever were able to. And I was part of that in building that. And from that, I made enough contacts and enough friends, so I was able to start my own statistical consulting company. I still have a great relationship with CKM Sports, which was the player agency. If you go on their website, they say that they use hockey data as their stats services. So we're still in a positive relationship, but I've separated myself from that company just as a purely client relationship. And so what we do now is we're a tracking analysis company. So I literally get paid to watch the game and
wait a minute. Make a... You watch the games?
You watch the games.
Come on.
Actually, at this point now, it's I pay people to watch the games for me. So
snap.
Your cover's blown, man.
But yeah, so we're a company. We track statistics, and depending on our clients, because we work with both players, we work with player agencies, we work with actual teams, including NHL teams, depending on who our clients are, we might just send them the stats, and they do with it as they may please. Or for some places, we actually will do analysis and recommendations off of that.
So, besides plus minus, what's the most important stat?
Face-offs, obviously.
To be honest with you, we do face-off stats. But the problem with face-off stats has always been the fact that people don't look at them properly, both in terms of how much value they have, because of the fact that, you know, face-offs aren't huge part of the game, but they are part of the game, because one of the things that I also do on the side is I actually manage a kids hockey team. It's basically midget AAA over here in Vancouver. And you know, face-offs are great because they're a set play, so it's one of the things that you can actually, when you see the statistics, you can actually make changes or hopeful improvements from that. But the problem with face-offs is just analysis from it. People are looking at, you know, teams that are struggling. Oh, it's because of face-offs. You know, they have a bad face-off percentage, so they must be bad. It's like, you know, there's a whole lot more to the game, about 95% more of the game than face-offs. So face-offs are never going to just on their own kill you or make your team.
Is there something consistent statistic-wise that separates good teams from bad teams? That like, I guess, well, I mean, that's kind of a dumb way of putting it. When you look at the best teams consistently in the NHL, what are some of the stats that they are consistently the best at?
Well, it depends. We look at things with, there's two different levels that you can look at stats. There's result statistics, which, generally speaking, the best for those guys are, the best teams are all the same. They all generate the best results for the most part. I mean, sometimes you can have a goalie that could pull a team up or down from where you'd expect them to, and I'm sure that fans of many different hockey teams have experienced that before. No comment. Generally speaking, we look at expected goals. I mean, there's public versions of expected goals, which is it's a more advanced version of the Corsi statistic that people look at, which is shot quantity, but we also add shot quality to it. I know the public, if you went to the Corsica website, which most people get their public hockey stats from, it uses shot location for shot quality. Company, we use shot location, but we also use other factors as well. And generally speaking, the best teams almost always do best in that, but that's just because they're best team. It's the way to measure the best teams. And the best teams don't always win. That's the way hockey is. It's a sport that's like that. It's one of the reasons why I like hockey a lot. It's not like basketball where, you know, the best team wins 80% of the time. In hockey, it's a lot more close and luck driven. When you're looking more at the lower levels of analysis, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. I'm sure some people don't like that saying, but whatever. I mean, a lot of people look at, you know, one of the things that gets talked a lot about in hockey analysis lately is zonal transition. You know, don't dump the puck, don't do chip plays. And, you know, in a general sense, you know, a non-chip play is going to be better than a chip play, because of the fact that when you're chipping the puck, you're reducing the chance that you have the puck, because you're optionally giving it away. Sure, you might be able to recover it on the forecheck, but you might not, as opposed to if you carry it over the blue line, obviously you have control of the puck. But you can look at the LA Kings under Sutterfeld those years, you know, two Stanley Cups and a whole bunch of years of outshooting and outscoring the opponents. And they were one of the worst teams for carrying the puck. They loved to dump and chase. And so it's not necessarily stylistically one way to win a hockey game, but so it's not always quite the same in terms of trends, but there are some generalities you can find out there.
I have one more question and then I'll pass it around, but if I was to pick a team at random, let's say that hasn't had a lot of playoff success in the last six, now going on 7 years, it could be any team. Let's just imagine that there's a team that hasn't made the playoffs in a long time. What kind of statistical deficits do you think you would see in that team's performance that might tell you why these problems persist?
Well, the first thing you would look at is you'd separate the three different factors. You look at shot quantity, or actually there's a couple of factors more than just three, but you look at even strength, how do they do in outshooting their opponents? That's one thing to look at. The next thing you kind of look at is like shot quality, which is, you know, where are these shots coming from? And then, of course, if you have more advanced abilities, you can look at other stuff, including passing and position of other players and defenders when the shots occur. And then on top of that, then the next thing you look at is actual conversion, which is, you know, like goaltending performance and also finishing talent. And then, of course, penalty differentials, how many penalties are you drawing versus taking? And also you look at you know, performance on those special teams, both at a goal level, because, you know, that's the actual results, but also looking at shots both in quantity and quality, because of the fact you want to see, are those results consistent? Because, you know, generally speaking, for example, we're in the beginning of the season right now, and a team could be, you know, having a lot of success on the power play, but, you know, it's been a little bit circumstantial, and nobody likes to hear luck driven, but it does happen in hockey. It is a sport of bounces, so you might want to look past that.
All right, guys, have at her.
I brought up the faceoffs earlier, and I have a conversation with a friend all the time about faceoffs, and it's such a funny thing. It seems every time they show the faceoff stat, the team that's winning the draws is losing the game, but I know that's not necessarily true. But where the possession, of course, is what makes that stat, right? Like, there was an incident in the game the other night, the Jets game. Guy clearly won, the Jets clearly won the faceoff, and then the defenseman turned it over 0.5 seconds later, and the other team had a shot on goal. Like, you know what I mean? So how is that? Why hasn't, I guess, the point of the question is, why hasn't the league or teams taken that a step further then? And going, it's about the possession. It's not about which way the puck goes on the faceoff.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. It's where the faceoffs are that are more important in possession.
Well, that's a big factor. Right. Like, as you already noted, if you're in a defensive zone faceoff, if you look at, like, when we're looking at impacts after a faceoff, let's say you want to get to the results of how a team is doing in faceoffs. Let's say if I'm analyzing a team, I'm not just going to look at, you know, how many faceoffs are they winning in the defensive zone. I'll also look at, you know, after defensive zone faceoff, you know, maybe the first 15 or 20 seconds after a faceoff, what's their shot differentials like? What's their goal differentials like after a win and also after a loss? Because you can see, you know, and you can compare that to the league, because you could say, hey, when, you know, team A, whenever they win a face-off in the defensive zone, they're still getting, because here's a little tidbit, every single team has a negative goal differential for the first 20 seconds after defensive zone face-off loss. Because when you win a defensive zone face-off, you still have to clearly exit out of your defensive zone, and you still have to go through the neutral zone, and you still have to, you know, score a goal. While the other team, they don't have all those steps. They could either, A, you know, take away the puck in the defensive zone, and, hey, that's, you know, three quarters of the battle right there. Or maybe they'll win it in the neutral zone, preventing you to gain entry. So because of that, you have to look at it relative to how other teams perform. And so you can see, you know, I know there was one thing where some people did some analysis on the Oilers many years ago. And, you know, one of the problems that they had was, despite the fact that, you know, some guys were winning faceoffs and some guys were not, all four of them, no matter what, for their centers, they were doing really poorly after the faceoff, regardless of whether they won or lost. And so one of the things that they, you know, kind of hypothesized was, you know, what are the wingers doing? How is their breakout systems working? What's their plans off these faceoffs? So the thing that's overrated is the faceoff statistic, because people just look at, you know, how many faceoffs does a team win or lose, you know, but that completely disregards the fact that, you know, most teams are very close to 50%. There's a lot of these neutral zone faceoffs, which aren't a huge deal. And of course, you know, it's ignoring how you perform for the couple seconds after a faceoff that will have a huge impact on you. Cause in the end, a faceoff is really just, it's just another puck battle. There's lots of puck battles. The difference between a faceoff and a regular puck battle is the fact that coaches have these set plays generally on how they react to a win or a loss. And the other thing, I think part of it is the reasoning is because, you know, as human nature, we tend to ignore, or it's difficult to notice the absence of something. People can obviously recognize when you lose a defensive zone faceoff and the other team scores a goal. And that's going to retain in your memory a lot, but they're not going to notice all the goals that don't happen when you lose a faceoff. They're not going to notice the goals that don't happen when you win a faceoff. Or sorry, I said that both times. When you win a faceoff and also when you lose a faceoff. And they're not going to notice that there's a difference, and that difference is the impact of winning the faceoff, not just the moments that you notice.
Anything else, guys? I have a question, but I want you guys to ask first.
No, go ahead, guys.
All right, well, if you're all going to be shy, then I'm going to ask.
Do it then.
So if you are looking at, you know, the variety of stats that you're kind of using to assess a team, and your team isn't winning, and statistically they're not good, what, in terms of a search for players, what do you do? What do you do to kind of change your fortunes? Is like, what portion of it comes down to, let's say, coaching, and what portion is personnel?
You know, it really depends on the individual situation. And, I mean, generally speaking, nothing is perfect, right? So generally speaking, there are marginal gains to be made off of all those changes. Because of the fact that no one is perfect, not myself, not the numbers, not anybody that runs by the eye test, nothing is perfect. So, there's always room for improvement, whether that is through personnel, whether through systems, whether that's through video coaching, whether that's through line optimization, all those things are going to have an impact, because there's always room for improvements in those areas. But what's going to differ is how much is the marginal gain with each change. And that will change from team to team. Generally speaking, it's hard to lose with a stacked team. That's not always the case, but personnel acquisition is the easiest way to push yourself into the win column, but it's also not easy to do in terms of gaining the best players, just because of the fact that they're a limited resource, and also the way that the NHL has designed things with both the cap and also the RFA status being to such a late age, or if you're speaking in other leagues, it's also difficult. Whether, you know, you're in minor hockey, you only get what you can draw from, or junior hockey, there's a lot of limits in terms of scouting resources. But yeah, Does that answer the question?
Yeah, and I'm going to go into we do an Ask the Superfan segment where people kind of, you know, post questions for us to ask. I'm actually going to go to one of them right away. Who has been better this year so far, Nick Batan or Brandon Tanev?
To be honest with you, I cannot tell you what the statistics would say off the top of my head.
Okay.
I could definitely look into it now, because one of the things you have to do is, you know, there's two different things. There's what are the results? Because you can say, let's just throw it out there. Let's just say Brandon Tanev's results are better, which I know may or may not be the case. I have no idea. I haven't looked them up off the top of my head. To be honest with you, I've mostly been concentrating with non-NHL statistics this year.
Okay.
Just because that's what my company has had a lot of inquiries for this year. But let's just say Tanev has better results. That might not necessarily he's had better performance, because one of the things you have to do is you have to also adjust for environment. These environmental factors can be anything like what kind of players he's playing against, what kind of line mates is he playing with. Generally speaking, in hockey, that is the biggest factor, your line mates. That's not just your forward line mates. It's also which defensemen are you lining up with. But also what zones are you being deployed in, with offensive zone versus defensive zone. Other things that actually impact results that a lot of people will minimize is also what conditions are you being placed in. You know, like generally speaking, coaches will send out different players when the team is leading versus when the team is trailing. Like the top players and will still get the most minutes, and the bottom players will still get the least minutes. But there will be somewhat of a shift in terms of percentages depending on leading and trailing, and that will impact results, especially because, you know, a lot of teams nowadays, they'll change forecheck systems and decision-making when you're trailing versus leading.
I'll ask one more question. Is there such a stat... Is there a statistical... I guess way to measure a stat that I heard this week that I've probably heard before, but it struck me for some reason this week, called quality of opponent.
Yes. There are some quality of competition statistics. Generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of many of them. What they generally do is they look at the average, of your opposition. Maybe what's the average Corsi of the defense of the players you face against? What's the average time and ice? Whether that's in per minutes or whether that's percentage, you know, like the average guy you face against plays 20% of their team's ice time or 30% of their team's ice time. And there's some niceness in that, in the fact that if you're facing better guys more often, you will look better in those statistics, but one of the problems with that is averages can be very deceiving. For example, you know, the average American human or average American family having 2.5 kids or something like that, you know, no one has 2.5 kids exactly. And what you can have is you can have people in certain situations where that could be a little deceiving. That quality of competitions number, but what we generally do is every time you have an event that occurs, just to give you an idea of what we do with our data at Hockey Data, is every single time, you know, let's say as you brought up, Brandon Tanev and Nick Patan are out on the ice, every time an event happens, whether it's good or bad, it takes note on who's on the ice. And that's not just in terms of line mates, but that's also who's on the ice for opposition. And you can generally get an idea of, and it's a little bit more robust looking at each individual situation as opposed to the average of all the situations and say, you know, let's just say Brandon Tanev faces tougher guys on average, but just because of the way that the population density curve is, Nick Patan's results are actually hurt more by competition. Just because he's been, well, on average, he's been easier, but the extreme results that he's gotten is all from these really extreme usage, which is a very small percentage of his ice time. That can account for that by just looking at each specific moment as opposed to the overall average.
So when you're comparing goalies, like there's a specific situation with a certain NHL team where some people have cited the quality of chances against, you know, if I want to be specific, between Mason and Hellebuck, that Hellebuck has faced less quality chances than Mason has. Is there a fair comparison that you can do to have comparables between goaltenders, or what numbers can you use? What statistics can you use to better compare shot quality and chances against relative to save percentage?
As I brought up earlier, like we have like an expected goal model, and there is a public version of expected goals as well. Which, to be honest with you, while it's not as good, and obviously I'm going to say that as the guy who sells it, so like I mean, you can take my word for with a grain of salt. I'm understanding that when people cannot look under the hood of what I have, they might not agree or be quick to believe me. But honestly, the public expected goal model is not too bad. It's pretty good for being descriptive. So in situations like this, when you want to say, okay, who was the one that got like the tougher minutes or the tougher shots, I think it's a pretty good use for that. So the Corsica website actually does run expected goals. So what you could do is you can actually look at the type of shots that these two goaltenders have faced. And here's the one thing. Let's just say goalie A has faced harder shots than goalie B. That doesn't mean that goalie A's been the better performer. He's just had a tough time because of the fact that, you know, maybe their relative performance, B has been way better than expected, despite the fact that he still has had the softer usage or deployment. So it's not as simple as just saying, you know, who's had the easier ride. Because if one guy's being 50% better than expected, one guy's only being 20% better than expected, just because the guy that's 20% better than expected is facing tougher shots, it doesn't mean that he's actually performing better.
Right. You said something earlier, Garrett, about the team with the best players wins. Like, is there another sport, and that's not what your strength would be, but what other sport would you not put your 12 best forwards on the ice? You know what I mean? What is, I don't know, maybe, you know what I mean? Maybe you're not the guy to ask because you would say there is no reason, I guess, but I don't understand in what sport you wouldn't, like, the more and more I listen to you and I think about things, it just seems more obvious that your fourth line should be, if you're talking about the Winnipeg Jets, should be Jack Roslovic and Chase DeLeo, and you know what I mean? Where, how do you get away from that in what you do to tell other people or you know, take the other side of it, I guess.
Yeah. No, I get what you're getting at. What I would say is, you know, there's, No coach is doing any decision. No GM is doing any decision because of the fact that they don't have reasoning behind it. Now, the reasoning might not be correct, and it might be correct, but no one's doing it without reasoning. Now, for example, one thing that we can look at is, you know, the quote unquote coach's pet. Everyone from, you know, not just, I know I'm speaking to Jets fans, but, you know, it doesn't take too long for me to think of examples with pretty much any coach in the entire NHL. Generally speaking, you know, there's a lot of these types of players that, you know, they're not the best players. And let's be honest, no matter who you are, you're going to have a weak link on your team. The best team, the worst teams, they all have the weakest link. Now, whether or not they're, you know, the weakest link that they would have if their team was optimized with the roster that they have available to them, that's a different debate. You can understand, like, the premise behind a lot of it is essentially the idea that, you know, these players might not give you as good a result as someone else that we have on our farm team or someone that we could easily get through free agency, let's just say. However, you know, because we believe that because of whether or not that's his leadership or whether or not, you know, that he leads by or he plays by example, which causes, you know, other people to perform in a certain manner, or whether, you know, he's conductive for practices. Like, I understand the reasoning, and you know what? The impact might exist and it might be significant in terms that certain players help the team beyond when they're on the ice, whether or not that makes the dressing room better. And I get that. And you know what? I will never argue that that doesn't exist, because like I've dealt with situations, and you know, there's, for example, let's say leadership. That's one that gets talked about a lot with stats. And you know, there's empirical evidence of leadership when you look at actual research that's been done on businesses, where certain people, they're actively good leaders, and what they do is they cause the workforce to work better. And so, like, I understand that, you know, you might have a certain player that makes the other teammates better. However, there's one issue with that, and that is the issue that I always have is I can tell you with a decent amount of confidence, not a lot, because nothing is perfect, but combining what I know from being able to scout in the traditional manner and also use numbers, with decent confidence, I can look at two NHL players and tell you which player is better, why he's better, and where he's better, and what's and by a certain amount, how many goals that's worth, how many wins that's worth in the standings. You know, there's obviously some guesswork in there, so it's not perfect, but I can get a general sense. However, when you're dealing with these intangibles, you don't know. You can say, you know, player A is a better leader than player B. Player A is grittier and plays a more grinding game, which wears down the other opponents. However, you have no idea what extent that impact is. Is it worth one goal over the season? Is it worth 20 goals over the season? And that difference becomes a little bit of guesswork. And so the way that I always advise it is I always suggest that, you know, the on-ice impacts have to be your priority, because that's what you know.
The real question is, Garrett, when are you going to come up with a way to quantify grit and sandpaper? That's the real question for me.
Okay, but seriously, I was going to say further question, same but serious question. People that argue the stats will always say, yeah, but it doesn't measure heart, it doesn't measure character. And I always say, that's bullshit, because whatever heart and whatever character and whatever speech you got in the intermission plays out in the stats that you produce. So it completely measures all of those things. It measures it the same as it doesn't measure it, because your results are your results with the captain giving a speech in between, or with your buddy having a fight 3 minutes before you're on the ice. Is that not true? It does measure heart and it does measure grit. Just really? Not tangibly.
I'm back. Right? Sorry about being dropped there.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. We're ranting about heart and grit, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, another... By the way, when you were describing it, the thing that I was thinking of is... So, for example, you know, Matt Hendricks may not be as good a hockey player, one, you know, as a single player versus, let's say, Nick Petan. But Matt Hendricks' leadership may be worth 10 more Patrick Laine goals than Nick Petan. Is that a way of thinking about it?
I can't say for specifically, but like that's the reasoning behind it. The reasoning behind it is, you know, let's just say Matt Hendricks gives you lesser results on ice than Nick Petan. However, you know, maybe he does give you more 10 more Patrick Laine goals, whether or not it's because he causes the room to be better, whether it's because the fact that he wears down the opponents, whether that's because of the fact that, you know, like he causes practices to be better, whether or not because he causes a lot of chemistry with, you know, everyone's systems and how everyone works with each other. You know, there's a lot of variables in there, and the human nature is there, or the human effect is real. But the problem is you don't know how, because, like, as you said, you know, my numbers, I can tell you Hendricks versus Patant. I can't say it online because, you know, that's my company's secrets and stuff like that. But I can say with decent confidence, if you played a full season of Patant playing versus Hendricks playing, who's the better player and how many goals that would be worth. In terms of intangibles, I cannot tell you who would cause Patrick Laine to be better because of the fact of these intangibles. Now, and I can't tell you by how many goals that would be worth and whether that would then tip the scale in the opposite direction. So what I generally speak, when I give advice, generally speaking, what I say is, you know, one, when you make these type of decisions based off intangibles, it has to be the bottom of your lineup because of the fact that, you know, as you go to smaller and smaller minutes and smaller roles, these marginal players are having less of an impact with their ice time. Just to give an idea, having a top 5 percentile second line versus a bottom 5 percentile second line, that improvement is about 3 or 4 times worth in wins than it is improving your fourth line by that same extent, bottom 5 percentile to top 5 percentile, just because of the fact that, you know, less ice time means less time to impact the game. The other thing that I always suggest is make it a tiebreaker. Don't make your decision. Don't ignore the on ice results because of the fact that there's these intangible reasonings. Because of the fact that you don't know whether or not it's more or less value. And the other thing that I suggest is to actually invest in proper empirical evidence on these intangibles, just because of the fact that, you know, people say you can't measure these things, but that's not quite true. Leadership, now I'm going to say grit, but that's not grit in the manner that you look at it in terms of hockey grit, but grit being more like persistence in face of adversity and that kind of stuff is actually studied and quantified somewhat in the business fields and other sciences. And so, like, I had one friend, Stefan, who used to do some blogging, and he deals with a lot of this kind of social sciences for the government of Canada. And one of the things that he said was, I do believe that these coaches and GMs are looking for the right thing. However, I don't know if they're using these intangibles in the right manner. And that's one of the ways I would suggest for changing that.
If you were going to give advice to people who are using or who want to get into using numbers and statistics, if you could give, you know, 2 or 3 main pieces of advice, what do you think they'd be? And, like, for example, one that I would give right away is never trust small sample sizes.
Yeah. The first thing I'd suggest is look up some primers. There's some really great primers out there. Just Google's your friend. There's also a resource called Meta Hockey, and what Meta Hockey does is try to compile a lot of the greatest research posts that are out there. So it's a great resource for finding stuff as well. And the other thing that I look at is, and the way that I would reword it is not don't trust small sample sizes, but understand what you're getting from different sample sizes. Because, you know, like we talked about the importance of outshooting. You know, it's not everything, but it's a good portion of the game. Outshooting, you know, one game versus outshooting 5 games versus outshooting 20 games. You know, all those things matter because that's actually what happened. But what that tells you about the player or the team or whatever is different. 20 games, you know, that tells you a lot more about the team and how they will perform for the rest of the season than one game does. But with that one game, it does tell you a little bit about how that one game was. So that's how I would look at sample sizes. And the other thing that I would say is, you know, just converse, try to be positive in a positive manner. There's positive construction, or sorry, positive criticism is actually fairly widely approved and actually preferred. I mean, a lot of us hockey stats people, because of the fact that there was, you know, it's not so much anymore, but there was a big, you know, media versus the stats guy thing. When you look back 4, 5, 6 years ago, they think that, you know, we don't like criticism, and, you know, some of it is justified, because I'm not saying that one side of that argument was being, you know, good, being good, honest, and nice towards the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us come from a scientific background, and the scientific background is, you know, the whole science method is based off the idea that, you know, nothing is perfectly proven. It's just not disproven. And the whole idea is, you know, you bring a hypothesis and you try to disprove it. And so, you know, positive criticism is actually usually smiled upon and we actually like, because of the fact that that's the only way that, you know, generally we grow through. And, you know, a lot of people think that we're stuck on one statistic, but you look at, you know, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, there was this Corsi and it was a big deal. But when you look at the big meat of analysis nowadays, you know, it goes a lot further than just shot differentials.
Do you think that people were turned off by the term advanced stats? Like the average fan, because it sounds elitist?
I think some do. But I get why, you know, people use those numbers. Like, there's nothing that's ever, you know, been a perfect description. Because, you know, some statistics are advanced when you look at, you know, the more advanced models, like whether that's expected goals, which is using, you know, linear regression based off of multiple different variables, or whether, you know, that's a, you know, a war model that might use some Bayesian ideas of looking at how people have performed in the past and taking that into account. But so there are some definite advanced numbers, but, you know, it's kind of interesting to me that the fact that, you know, look at Corsi. Corsi is not an advanced stat. It's literally just, you know, the share of shots at 5-on-5. It's, you know, who shot the puck more at 5-on-5. That's not really that advanced. And you know what? There are some people that are probably turned off by that. However, the way that I look at it is, if you're, you know, numbers are a tool, and they're a tool that paints part of the picture. Like, when we look at the hockey game itself, it is there's a whole picture out there, and you know, stats paints, you know, one portion of the picture, and the eye test, because of the fact that your memory is faulty, and we're not able to recognize things that don't occur. We just recognize things that do occur. It paints another portion of the picture, and, you know, there's some overlap there, and for that, stats and the eye tests are able to confirm each other. And for the areas that you don't have overlaps, stats and the eye tests are able to give you understanding and information on what occurred and about the game. But generally speaking, if you're avoiding one of the tool purposely because of the name, in my personal opinion, you're probably not really wanting to be very open-minded about it anyways. So I would say probably most of the people that avoid it because it's called advanced stats probably weren't wanting to get into it anyways if it was named something else.
I have another question, but guys, go jump in before I keep hogging the questions.
I just wanted to say me and Garrett all of a sudden don't sound anything alike anymore. That's
yay.
That's because of the content of what's going on.
That, that was the content joke. That was the joke.
Yeah. Okay. I have a numbers question, Garrett, for you. Is 600 wins a lot?
And it, well, 600 wins is an aggregate number, so yes. Well, everything, a lot is relative. So 600 wins would be relative to the context. So 600 wins could be a lot. I know, for example, in hockey, 600 wins would be a lot of wins for a season, because the fact you only play 82 games.
Uh-huh.
It could be a lot of wins, which I know that what you're getting at is Paul Maurice.
What?
Has won a lot of hockey games. There's not too many people who have won that many hockey games. That is a lot. What I also know you're probably getting at is you're probably getting at is 600 wins a good measure in performance? And to that I say, that is for you to figure out.
All right, so I'll ask the rest of you guys. What do you guys think? Is 600 wins a lot?
Over 20 years? No.
1995 is when he started coaching, right? He started coaching in 1995.
Did you see the Jets on their Twitter profile? They were like, let's celebrate by looking at pictures of Maurice coaching. And half of it is like the Hartford Whalers. Who he's coaching. Like, that's how long he's been around.
And Hartford, 1995.
And nothing is more exciting than watching a picture of somebody coach.
He was riveting before it was alive. Take that for you.
So Maurice, yeah, he picked up his 600th win, and of course, this is just everybody's making a big deal. And I mean, you know, in terms of just longevity in the league and actually being around long enough to amass that amount of wins, I mean that's definitely an accomplishment. Like, we can't, you know, we shouldn't downgrade.
Can't take the 600 away. You can't. I mean, that's great, but when you apply it to win percentage and you apply it versus the losses, which is the same thing, obviously, but you know what I mean, and you apply it to the length of career, it's not all too exciting. So I don't get it. The team should celebrate it, but how fans are justifying anything with that is ridiculous.
And I think we said it's, you know, it's an average because, you know, it's 20 seasons, not all of which that he's he hasn't got through full seasons, 20 years, I don't believe. So it averages out to between like 30 and 35 wins or 36 wins a year, right? And if you think about in general, you're probably looking at needing, what, 40 to 45 wins to be in playoff contention? That's not very good.
Well, and we know the other stats. We know, what, playoffs five times in 20 seasons, is it? Over 40 points, I think only three or four times.
Oh, over 40 wins, you mean?
40 wins. Sorry, yeah. Right? I mean, so those are where's the Twitter stuff for that?
Well, I think we're providing a lot of it, to be honest with you.
Coached a lot of bad teams, guys. He has coached a lot of bad teams.
And he did win the OHL championship with the Detroit Junior Red Wings, so.
When he was 20 years old or something, right?
94-95.
So. Yeah.
He was like 26 years old, seriously, when he won that championship.
So,
like,
Maurice.
I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Maurice picks up his 600th win. He is, what, five away from the all time record for losses. So, we're still counting that one down. But, yeah, that's Paul Maurice. Overall, though, since we last spoke, we spoke last right after the Maple Leafs, the home opener. And so there was the shellacking there. I mean, since then, the team is 4-2. They, in their last, what, five games, they're 4-1. I believe everyone's acknowledged that. Connor Hellebuck is 4-0, and Steve Mason is 0-3, which is amazing. Again, it's very early in the season, but.
Quality of opponent.
Quality of opponent. Yeah, that's right. If you're the 31st place team in the NHL, isn't quality of opponent working against you in every game when it comes to team?
Yeah.
Garrett, you don't need to answer that.
No comment.
All right. I know that, I mean, despite the fact that the record is right now a winning record, that I don't believe that the actual, again, the stats in terms of whether the team is actually outplaying their opponents and deserves these wins isn't really matching up to the wins. That's correct? in general.
Well, there are some bright spots, though, right? So to this year, there are some bright spots. They are above 500. Nick Ehlers is playing out of his tree. Patrick Laine had 2 goals last game. Some good stuff happening, right? Other than being outplayed in every game except for 2.
Can I interject about something?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I just want to, as the numbers guy or whatever is saying, don't deserve to win. Generally speaking, I prefer to say, because the fact that, you know, like a goalie going hot, like let's say one Mason or Helbuick steals the game, that doesn't necessarily mean the team didn't deserve to win because, you know, the goaltender is still a factor. Now, how often is a goalie going to steal a game for you? That's another question. So I don't know.
About 13 times in the last 6 years.
Yeah, you might be better to say they might not continue winning if they continue playing in a particular manner.
Well, I remember arguing the reverse last year when people would say to me, well, you know, this team is actually really good if it weren't for the penalty killing and the goaltending. And it's like, well, those are things. Like, it's like, so they would be really a good hockey team if it weren't for hockey things that they're not good at, right? That are important. So yeah, you can say it on the other end. Like if you're getting good goaltending and, you know, if you're getting working on special teams, you can counter other things, you know? And so, yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah, we focus on even strength because, you know, that's 80% of the game and 60% of the goals, but you know, the other percentage matters too.
There was an interesting thing that came up about the Blue Bombers in the last week, Roddy, that seemed to set you off. Do you want to mention it?
It didn't really set me off. Somebody in the mainstream
You tweeted media, like 40 times about it.
No, like 3
That's
times.
A normal day for him.
No. I went on a rant today. Like I just tweeted about it. I said, you know what, this is just it. They don't, the media does not cover our professional teams the same way. So I just, for the life of me, couldn't remember when somebody in the mainstream media tweeted that a Winnipeg Jet didn't deserve their paycheck. And, you know, there was a tweet on Twitter about Justin Medlock struggling this year, not living up to the contract that he signed.
Justin Medlock is the kicker for the Blue Bombers, right?
Yes.
So he's getting paid the most of any kicker in the league, and he missed field goals, I'm assuming. I don't know. I don't watch the Bombers.
He's probably the second or third highest paid player on the team also, just to qualify that.
And so whatever, it's warranted. It's a good observation. I just don't think that these observations have been, you know, spoken about in the same manner or with the same veracity as regarding the Jets as it most commonly is tweeted about regarding the Bombers.
Well, there was an article posted to NHL.com today that was written by a member of the Winnipeg media that described the Winnipeg as soaring right now. Did you see that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like one game over 500. I mean, again, I get you're 4-1 in the last 5 games. That's good. That's you know, you're winning hockey games, so that's good. But soaring. Yeah,
but there are teams that are 7-1 right now. Like that's soaring. And I also just wanted to go back to that Medlock thing. I also noticed that with the Pom Pom Crew, it goes the same way. They sit there and bash the Bombers. They bash Paul LaPolice. They bash every Bomber, every coach, but not the Jets. And the fans do the same thing. It's really strange.
And these guys have clinched a home playoff game. They're in the playoffs for the second year in a row. And, you know, they don't escape criticism ever. So, you know, this same media member has basically been dogging Richie Hall since the beginning of the year. Now, the Bombers' defense isn't that great, but if we're talking about results, they're second place in the West, and they've clinched a home playoff game. So Like, I don't get it. So comparatively, we have a team that's made it once into the play, to postseason once in their existence back in Winnipeg, who haven't won a playoff game and, you know, seemingly escape most criticism.
Yeah, but in the CFL, like, what, two-thirds of the teams make the playoffs, right? One of the reasons why, I don't know, I just can't get into it. And
but our recent history with the Jets, well, no, with the Bombers sucking forever, right? You'd think that there'd be more of a positive, you know, spin on it, considering. But you know, it's all rainbows and unicorns when it comes to the other professional team in this town. But okay, that's all. That's it.
Do you guys want to talk about anything else before we do Ask the Superfans?
There's another hashtag too that I used earlier, but ask Garrett, not a fan.
I see that too.
there are more of those, so you might want to read those.
All right, some of these we've already addressed, so I'll read them just so that you know the people can get their names on the show, which is the real reward, right? Hanger Hockey at Hanger Hockey. What are your thoughts on Paul Maurice being pushed down everyone's throats and people eating it up? Hashtag please like our coach. We've already discussed that. Steve at Dr. Pet_Petchy asks, how much grit could Hendricks grit if Hendricks could grit? Hashtag gritty gritness. I think we've kind of addressed that. We have, what is this? this is in reply. So Garrett, wrote, should the super fans hashtag hire Garrett, which is why you're on the show, I believe. But then, Tony_MB Hockey asks, is Hockey Data in trouble and now asking to be hired and maybe monetize the podcast?
what's your equity right now?
We can't even get a sponsor to pay for our hosting service. So that's where we're at.
But the good news is the hosting service isn't that expensive, so we're not that far in the hole.
Yeah, it's like $150 for a year of hosting, and we cannot get that money. So there you go.
Maybe we might have a potential sponsor on our show right now. No?
No, Canada the Post.
Let's see here. Hank Wood at DJ Hank Wood asks, who loses his job first, Huddy or Flaherty? My answer is whichever one dies first.
Oh,
what?
Wow, that's pretty. Yeah. That's pretty dark.
Lifetime.
Oh, contract. He didn't suggest killing them.
No. No, I didn't suggest that at all. That's just, in other words, how do you lose your job if you have a job for life?
Well, and that's how, true. If you haven't lost it already, how could you ever? Because you can't be right. Any worse.
No.
If you were to guess, though, in all honesty, who would you pick?
They all go at the same time, or they don't go.
Yeah, it's when Maurice gets let go, they all go. Because until Maurice gets let go, these guys aren't getting let go.
Even though that would soothe some feelings and maybe give Maurice an extra bit of term.
What message are you sending?
Well, he didn't get to hire them, but he didn't get to hire them, right? So,
but he's kept them.
Yeah, but he could at least go now. At least give me the guys I want. I'm just spitballing. It's bogus,
yeah.
But
I I don't know the last time anybody fired assistants to send a message to the head coach. Like
yeah, good call. Yeah.
I have this one here. I don't have a question. I just want to hear my name on the podcast. I'm not sure who wrote that, so we'll go on. Just kidding. It's Helen and Sydney Oz. Be nice, yeah. Alan.
Hi, Helen.
Nick Batan's army at Daniel Winnipeg 55. Is Justin Medlock a hashtag good kicker? Hashtag like my kicker.
Yes, he is.
Let's see here.
He's just put on a little weight, though. I don't know what's up with that. But maybe I don't know.
Hanger Hockey has one for Garrett. Who's the best Jets focused analytics guy on Twitter? Bonus question, do you like disturbing socks?
So who's the best
Jets focus
on Twitter now? Ooh.
Yeah.
No longer me, so sorry, let me shoot my own horn more. You know what? And this is not a cop out because I recently actually had someone ask me this question because they were looking for follows, and I said, honestly, my opinion as of right now, I don't think that there's like, because I don't think I deserved all the focus, but I did. I was the primary focus person for that role at that one time. But you can argue whether or not I deserved it. At this moment in time, I don't think there's either a person that deserves it quite yet or has stood out in not in a negative way, but just like the fact that I haven't had, it seemed to be kind of more contribution through a group. So my suggestion is if this answer is just because this question is because they're trying to figure out who to follow, I would say, my suggestion would be to follow quite a few, because I think there is quite a bit of good work out there. I've seen both on Arctic Ice Hockey, Jets Nations, and Athletic, in terms of websites. There's definitely a lot of competition out there, and that's a good thing in my personal opinion, because the fact that I said, you know, when it comes to more scientific thinking, having, you know, not just one person, having stuff being questioned and being looked at from multiple different angles is a good thing. So I'm sorry, I don't really have an answer of one person, but I would definitely say committee.
I believe that I saw somebody comment today that those sites that you mentioned are empty calories. Did anyone see that?
No, I did not see that.
Oh, you need to have a look up yeah, empty calories and see. Someone came. I don't know who said it, but it was, they specifically pointed out, I know they pointed out SB Nation. I don't know if it was, they talked about The Athletic as well, but they did point out a few sites as being empty calories. And of course, there's a strong, strong backlash to those comments.
Oh my goodness. Sorry, I'm just looking over it right now. This is hilarious.
Hockey News at Hockey News with a Z. From a while ago, who's worse, Bergevin, Sweeney, or Benning? No surprises with these teams' trajectories.
Mm. Mm. Bergevin is looking really stupid.
Yeah.
I'd say Bergevin.
Every time Bergevin's done something, hasn't it just been like crazy? Really? I don't know.
Oh, hey, I'm back.
Okay. Well, okay. We've got one here. We can maybe do a little quick promotion here. But Pappy, you're doing something for November, correct?
Yeah, my Movember team.
Talk about it for a second.
So this is my eighth year doing a Movember team, and we raise around $3,000 a year. And actually, this November 18th, we're having a bowling event at Chateau Lanes. It's called the Movember Disco Molarama. So we're going to have a disco-themed bowling night at Chateau Lanes on the 18th of November, if you guys want to donate. If you want to join my team, I'll be tweeting out a link to join my team, or you can look at my timeline, and it's plastered all over my timeline right now.
So. And if I hear that if you bowl a perfect game that night, every male in attendance gets a free prostate exam. Is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. kudos to at Mike_Young for tweeting about that to remind everybody. But yeah, go to look up again at Big Pappy Peg City for more information on that, and do donate. All jokes aside, we could all use prostate exams now that, well, I could. I'm about to hit 40. It's about time to get the old hot date with the doctor.
Do it.
Yeah.
And Know Your Nuts is another big campaign for Movember. Know Your Nuts. So,
let's see.
For testicular cancer. Yeah.
Jets fan Jeff, this is for Garrett. Who do you think you are?
I am somebody who general managers and coaches and analysts and player agents and NHL players think highly enough of my opinion that they pay me money for it.
Amazing.
And what about Bob McKenzie? Come on.
Well, Bob McKenzie doesn't pay me money.
No, I know, but you guys are like close personal friends, right?
Oh, yeah. I actually, it's funny because like he followed me randomly. Oh, not randomly. When I got moved over from Arctic Ice Hockey to Jet Stations, and I just thought maybe it was just a courtesy follow because he tends to do that for a lot of the Nations Network writers whenever they get hired. And at least back when Thomas Durant ran it, I don't know if that's still the case anymore. But there was like no conversation, no anything, and then all of a sudden, randomly. He replied to one of my tweets about like, but it was still like, I think I quote tweeted him. It was the, Derek Engelin signing. And I made a joke about it, with his tweet being quote tweeted and he replied to it. But other than that, there was no conversation or anything. And then also one day he was talking about people to look out for in the future. And he mentioned my name, and I was like, wait, he's actually read my stuff? Like, I thought it was just a courtesy follow. Like, but yeah, one thing I like to point out is that pretty much every coach, every GM, and people of hockey ops for NHL teams has a secret Twitter account out there looking at what people say.
Ah, there you go.
See? I knew they were listening to me. I knew it.
I think a lot of it's looking at like analysts, whether it's, you know, like a lot of the guys who get hired, like for example, Dawson Spriggings, who was going by the code name "Don't Tell Me About Hart" on Twitter, just recently got signed up by Colorado Avalanche. I think that's more along the lines of like why those guys are out there.
I knew they weren't listening to me. I knew it.
This is from Hanger Hockey for you, Garrett. Favorite hobby when not analyzing numbers on a computer? Detecting metals on the beach?
That's a good one. I like that one. But no, if you want the honest answer, my personal favorite hobbies... Well, if you want to exclude the lazy ones, like everyone has that no one really wants to talk about, like, you know, watching television, wasting time on YouTube or whatever. I just got an eye roll from my wife who walked by. I am a little bit obsessive, with the sport of powerlifting just because of the fact that, don't make fun of me. I'm being made fun of at home. I am a little obsessive with the sport of powerlifting just because of the fact that, you know, my obsession, one sport has become a job. And so I can't really, it's not the same. I wish I could say don't get me wrong. It's a wonderful job. It's probably the best job I could ever think of, but, it has changed the sport a little bit for me. And so because of that, I just need something that's a different, way to vent and to do that, I've become a very, very weak person in the sport of strong people.
Do you actually do your own powerlifting? Or do you just go and watch? Do you go to the gym and just watch people?
I have not competed. I've been training for a little while. And because of the fact that I am a numbers nerd, I have looked at a numbers manner of it. So I projected what... given my growth and such like that, how I'd be. And my goal is to compete this coming summer and not get last place. And I looked at it and it's not most probable, but it is possible.
So not only could you outnumber people who challenge you, but eventually you can just fuck them up too physically. So,
I've always been a pretty decent fighter. So,
there you go. Out of the blue.
Garrett Grint.
It's Garrett Grint.
Garrett Grint.
Hey, I led the league in penalty minutes for my position 1 year in the Southern Vancouver Island Minor Hockey Association, okay?
So all you pom-poms can, you know, just shut the hell up, because he's not just a stats geek, he's a face puncher too.
And
so,
he's full of intangibles.
Not a good one. I was leading for goaltenders. That's not that special.
So he's a Hextall.
A Hextall, yeah. A couple of quick ones that we've already addressed, but I'll read them quickly from Menonite 427, JMT 427 on Twitter. Rather than having role players, does it make sense to have three or four equal lines and give the best players more minutes in high leverage times? I know you kind of talked about it. Is there more to add, or is that?
The only thing I would add is, so hockey is definitely a sport where your top end players matter more than your bottom end players. So there's a conversation about strong link and weak link sports. So what that means is where are the greatest marginal gains for the average team. So in hockey, improving your best players is more important than improving your weakest players. That's a general trend. Now when you get in the specifics, there are teams that are out there where that is not the case. And in terms of spreading out talent, I would say spreading out talent is very important on the top three lines. The guy that I mentioned just recently, Dawson Spriggings, one of his first research articles, I think it was at the RIT conference, which just happened this weekend, but the previous one, the year before, that's what he did on, was the fact that by loading up the talent on the top line, teams are actually hurting themselves more so than helping. Again, this is a general thing. There's going to be differences in the specifics, but we've also started to see that. The Pittsburgh Penguins have put Phil Kessel as one example on the third line. He's not a third line player, but the fact is that they have a first line talent between Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel on three different lines, which makes them extremely difficult to line match against. And they have three guys that are pulling up performance for three different lines. So they have someone that's out there for basically 80% of the game, just because of the fact that there's so little ice time for the fourth line. It'd be even greater than 80%.
So how does that apply to a team that has two fourth lines?
Generally speaking, I would say that is an issue because of the fact that improving your third line is almost equally important to improving your second line. So if your third line could be considered tied for the second most important line between your four. So if you're running two fourth lines in terms of actual results and impact and talent level, that can be a hindrance to your team.
There you go. The last question, I don't know if you can answer this. It's very specific to the Jets, but who are the most underrated and overrated Jets? This is from Don Wads, at Don_Wads.
I actually saw this question on Twitter, and the answer is I have no clue. And the reason why that is because overrated and underrated is not how good or bad a player is. A player can be amazing and be overrated, and a player can be terrible and underrated, because you have to get an idea of how well they're actually perceived. I see people's comments and stuff like that. And so generally speaking, I would say that, I've even said that Matthew Perreault is the Jets' most underrated player, but I could be completely wrong with that. Maybe I've just been subjectively noticing the wrong things, and people actually do understand how good of a player Perreault is. Cause Perreault is a player that even when he's not scoring points, he's making everyone around him do better. And so because of that, I have always said that he's underrated, but I could be wrong in that because, maybe I don't have a good handle of what the true perceptions of the average person is actually.
And so there you go. I think that's where we end off with the questions and probably with the show for this week. Clearly the smartest show we've done. Like, the next show, we're going to go back to our usual, grunts and snorting and all sorts of...
Swearing, so, yeah. And yelling.
Passing wind.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't quite get away.
We got that.
Yeah. So all that stuff on the next show. The Jets play again on Thursday, so we still have 3 days until their next game. But then they go on a pretty torrid pace for a while. So should be lots of in-game content to talk about. Certainly down the road, Garrett. Always welcome to come on and kind of smarten up the show whenever you wish. So thank you for joining us tonight. Garrett Hohl, at Garrett Hohl on Twitter, GarrettHohl is where you find them for anything that has to do with intelligence following hockey, especially when it comes to stats, numbers, and some pretty witty banter, too. Always, I like Garrett, whenever you chime in on something, and I like that you're being... People, you know, some people take it the wrong way, but it's like you're really just like saying, hey, like the numbers say this, right?
Yeah, I think the other thing is people don't understand that, except for when I'm talking the numbers, I'm also not exactly a very serious person. I'm sure people have noticed now listening to me on this podcast, but and you know, it's difficult to get that through text because the fact that, you know, sometimes I'm talking very seriously about very specific serious things, which is, you know, these are what the results say. Don't hate me, hate the numbers. But you know, hate the player or the team or the coach or whatever that's making the numbers happen the way that they happen. I'm just pointing out what they are.
Any plugs you want to get in right now, G?
I don't really have anything specific. I guess I can just go through the list of everything. So I run the company Hockey Data. We have a Twitter account, although it doesn't tweet too many things, generally speaking, but it does have some marketing stuff and whatever, and we have our own website. I still technically run Hockey Graphs. I don't run any of the day-to-day operations. That is for your true hockey nerds, and I mean that nerds not just being like a nerd for hockey, but being a nerd who actually enjoys hockey, which is a little bit different, because the fact that there's a lot of research and analysis type stuff that happens on that website. And then, of course, there's my own Twitter account, which I already plugged. And there's the Greater Vancouver Canadiens, the major midget hockey team that I currently run and just came off of a weekend sweep. So we're 6-4-0. So hope that continues.
I think that would be the definition. Your team is soaring right now.
Yeah.
All right, the rest of you mouth breathers, who are you?
Yeah, this is Roddy, Big Poppy, Peg City, Donate to Movember.
Yeah. I'm Brian, at Brian from AIH.
And I'm Chris, CMAC Live. I'm thankful that Garrett was on our show. That was awesome.
Slip with Five Eyes or Slip here. Thanks a lot, everybody. Thanks again, Garrett. And we will see you all probably in about a week. Good night. I